Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Howard Feldman, and it's Wednesday, which means we get to speak to Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, good morning. How are you today?
Episode peachy, Dr. Howard. Lovely to be with you again.
Well, it is nice to chat to you, but I'm a little annoyed about this whole BMI thing. And I always feel that it's somewhat anti-Semitic because we can never find a Jew within the right range of BMI. I mean, I've lost quite a lot of weight over the last year or so. And next time I go back to my dietitian, I'm hoping that I'm going to be obese. Like, I just can't seem to win this. You know, it's...
That is difficult. You see, we do have an imperative within our bodies to not starve to death.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And so part of that
exactly.
is that we keep on wanting to eat more even when we're already full. Bummer, man.
And not only that is, you know what, we worry about thin Jews. You know, we think something's wrong. They must have a lot of stress. They need to eat more. You know, we programmed to worry when someone gets thin.
There's also another factor in that thanks to evolution, we don't have the little trigger to stop eating immediately. So we humans have been around as Homo sapiens sapiens, like you and me, due to evolution for around, say, 200,000 years. But only for a very small part of that have we had very well-established agriculture so that we're never short of food. So most of the time, as hunter-gatherers, it might be there and it might not be. So we have evolved to keep on eating even when we're full. And so there's this 20-minute delay between when your tummy is full and your brain knows about it. And in that 20-minute, you could eat easily another day's worth of calories or kilojoules.
Are some of us more susceptible or have less of that notion of understanding when we're full?
Yes, that is variable because humans are all different. You see, the whole thing about the egg-sperm thing is that you end up with humans who are different from their parents. On average, the child will have half their DNA from the father and half from the mother, but it can go 80-20 or 20-80. And I'm sure you've had the experience yourself of walking down the street and seeing somebody or seeing a family walking out and you say, gee, they all look like him. Or her, and that's your 80-20 or your 20-80. So we're all very different. So in our family, my mother-in-law has zero time delay between being full and knowing about it, whereas in me, it's about 10 or 15 minutes. So I have to actually look at the food and say, I know I'm going to feel full and not feel good, so I should start now. So the BMI was invented about 1832 in Belgium as an example of the government wanting to help its citizens and looking after their overall general health. And it's not too bad, but you can have two people of the same size, of the same height, and one person can have all of their weight in a big blob of fat around their tummy, but the other person can have big shoulders and very little fat around the tummy. So you need another measure that takes account of where the fat is, and that is a very simple waist circumference. More than 80 centimeters for women and more than 94 centimeters for men is associated with increased chronic disease. And let me tell you, it's all sorts of diseases. It's heart disease, liver disease, arthritis, some sort of cancers, diabetes, sleep apnea. Now, Howard, have you seen the singer Lizzo?
No.
She's a rather largish person, but gee, she dances on stage. So she is somebody who's a bit fat, but is also very fit. So on one hand, she probably outdoes me for cardiovascular fitness. But on the other hand, because she's carrying that extra fat around her tummy, that then gives her more risk with the disease. But then it varies again. If the fat is above the hips, it's more dangerous. If it's below the hips, it's less dangerous.
Interesting that. Is the BMI, the actual measure, outdated?
It's part of the overall clinical program. So if you're looking at an average person, it'll give you a reasonable first starting point. So you think, oh, are you a bit overweight? Maybe yes, maybe no, or you're within a normal range. But you've got to look at the whole patient and see where the fat is distributed. You've also got to compensate for where that person comes from. So in normal, let me rephrase that. The study was done originally on white Anglo-Saxons. So on white Anglo-Saxon people, 25 to 29 is considered a little bit overweight. and anything from 20 to 25 is considered normal, whatever that is. But it should be a little bit less if you're a smaller Asian person, or a little bit more, you shift the range up a bit higher for normal if you're a big Polynesian person.
It's really, really fascinating. Is there any chance that they can revise it? Because it's not
They just add more to it. So the next thing that they've added to it is the waist circumference, and that's a really good start. And then, of course, you can go looking deeper into various bloods parameters, such as the glucose level and the triglycerides. But a combination of BMI and waist circumference, if you've got both of those down, you're in very good health. And I'm sure that you're a very happy person, Dr. Howard.
Very, very indeed. Let's just talk about measles now that we're focusing on health. That measles, in fact, has an extra sting in its tail. Tell us about this.
Yes. So measles is still around in the world. It used to kill 2.5 million people every year, vaccines. But even today, it kills more than 100,000, and they don't have to die. If they had the vaccine, they wouldn't die. And it's not a harmless disease. In the USA, 20% of everybody who gets measles ends up in hospital, which is not a good thing. But the sting in the tail for measles is that it can wipe out somewhere between 11 and 75% of all of the things that your immune system has developed over your entire life. All of your antibodies against chickenpox or hepatitis or COVID, one dose of measles, and anything between 11% and 73% of all your antibodies just vanish.
That's unbelievable. That is really, really incredible. Very, very interesting indeed. And we've got a little bit more time. There were two lightning bolts recorded, records set in 2020 by two separate storms. Tell us about this.
Both in 2020, one of them went 770 kilometers from Texas to Mississippi, 770 kilometers. That was the longest single bolt. It was picked up by AM receivers on the ground, but also filmed from space. And the second one, the longest duration, that was in a different part of the world. That was on the other side of the equator over Uruguay, northern Argentina. And the lightning bolt lasted for 17.1 seconds.
Oh, my word.
So the lightning bolt came and said, hey, look at this. Yep, it's still there. Yep, it's still there. Have I got to keep looking, Mum? Yes, hey, you got to keep looking. Is it still there? Yes, it's still there. I'm bored. Doesn't matter. Keep looking. And finally, after 17 seconds, the lightning bolt went away. OMG.
That is so scary. Dr. Carl, thank you. As always, fascinating insights into the world around us.